Die Übersetzung von Jans Stimme vom Deutschen ins Englische wurde mit einer KI erstellt.
Los imaginábamos siempre lo peor.
We were prepared for the worst, but when we got to the front line, the reality was even worse.
Dominic is from Colombia, nearly 10,000 kilometers away from Ukraine, and now he's here, fighting on the front line. Why would someone voluntarily join a war that isn't even their own? Is it because of what they believe in, because of the money, or a bit of both? I met four Colombians serving in the Ukrainian military. They told me about drone attacks, fear, the brutal winter, and why they say this war turned out to be far worse than anything they had ever imagined.
In Crisis Mode, the podcast from Conflict Zones with Jan Jessen.
Hi, I'm Jan Jessen, political editor and a war and crisis correspondent for the Funke Media Group. In this episode, we're looking at men who traveled thousands of kilometers to fight in Ukraine. Colombians on the front line, they're fighting for a country that isn't their own. They talk about justice, about money, about the hope for a better life, and about a war that turned out to be far worse than they ever expected. We're not meeting them in a military base or sitting behind desks. Instead, we're out in a patch of woodland in the Dnipro region, in east-central Ukraine, in the middle of the Ukrainian summer. It's hot, humid, and surrounded by lush green trees. At first glance, it almost feels peaceful. And that's exactly what makes the stories these men tell feel so surreal. Standing among the trees are four soldiers in Ukrainian uniforms. They're laughing, smoking, cracking jokes. One of them is on crutches. None of them are Ukrainian. They don't give me their real names. To me, they're Sombras, Logator, Coco, and Dominic. They're military call signs. That's pretty common when reporting on Ukrainian soldiers. For security reasons, they don't use their real names. They go by their call signs instead. It quickly becomes clear that these aren't men who came here looking for adventure, but their story can't be summed up in a single word either. So the first question is obvious. Why are you here?
What brought me here to Ukraine? Injustice. I don't like seeing injustice against children or women. There are also a lot of lies being told. And of course, money is part of the reason as well. Injustice here in Ukraine is what brought me here too. I came to help and to make my small contribution to this country. It was also one of my dreams to serve as a soldier in another country. Thank God I was able to make that dream come true, and now I serve here in the army. The reason I'm here in Ukraine is because I don't accept injustice, dictatorships, or communism. Another important reason is the money, to give myself a better quality of life back home. The reason I'm here is because I saw what was happening in Ukraine on social media. Justice was being violated by Russia. And besides that, I also wanted to feel a bit of adrenaline in my life, if you want to put it that way.
You can already hear almost the entire complexity of this story in their very first answers. The men actually seemed pretty relaxed. They were calm, laughing a lot, clearly enjoying themselves, even enjoying the chance to talk to a journalist, especially given the way we had to communicate. None of the four spoke Ukrainian, so we had to rely on translation apps. I spoke English, translated it into Spanish, and then translated their answers back again. They got a real kick out of that. At the beginning, I even tried speaking a little Spanish myself, even though I really can't. That actually turned out to be a bit of an icebreaker. We ended up having quite a few laughs together. But that's also what made the whole situation feel so surreal. Just days before I met them, these men had been fighting on the front line. They had experienced hell on the battlefield. They talk about injustice, about standing in solidarity with Ukraine, but they also talk about money, about wanting a better life back home, about fulfilling a lifelong dream of being a soldier, and even about the adrenaline. If you focus only on the money, you'll probably say, well, they're mercenaries. If you listen only to what they say, you might call them volunteers fighting for a more just world. The truth is, it's probably not quite that simple. Colombia went through decades of armed conflict. You'll probably remember groups like the FARC, the left-wing guerrilla movement that fought for years, really for decades, against the Colombian military. Those conflicts, which were very close to a civil war, claimed tens of thousands of lives. Today, those conflicts have largely come to an end, but many former soldiers and police officers with combat experience struggle to find their place in civilian life. Stable, well-paid jobs are hard to come by. At the same time, Ukraine is urgently looking for experienced fighters, and it pays significantly more than many of these men could ever earn in Colombia. We've talked several times on this podcast about Ukraine's serious recruitment problems, and we'll link some of our previous reporting on that in the show notes. That's exactly the reality these men find themselves in, somewhere between political conviction, the search for a future, military pay, and a war that started thousands of kilometers away, but has suddenly become their everyday life.
I served as a soldier in Colombia for 4 years. Since coming to Ukraine, I've gained 3 months of combat experience, and I've been here for 4 months in total. My goal is to make my contribution so that Ukraine can achieve victory. We are here now to contribute to Ukraine's freedom.
Some of these men already had military experience. Coco, for example, served as a soldier in Colombia, and Dominic says that now he's fighting here for Ukraine's freedom. Back in Colombia, that's a highly controversial issue. President Gustavo Petro has accused Ukraine of using Colombians as cannon fodder, and the human cost has indeed been enormous. Hundreds of Colombians are believed to have been killed in this war, although there are no reliable official figures. If you walk across Kyiv's Maidan Square, you'll come across a large memorial field filled with thousands of flags. Each flag represents a fallen soldier. Among them, you'll also see many portraits and flags honoring fighters from Latin America. And it's not just Colombians. There are volunteers from Brazil, Venezuela, and several other Latin American countries. There are also many European volunteers fighting on Ukraine's side. A few years ago, for example, I met a German former Bundeswehr soldier who had joined the Ukrainian armed forces. Later, he took his own life because he couldn't cope with the stress of the front line and the trauma he had experienced. There are also mercenaries and foreign fighters from the United Kingdom, the United States, France, and many other countries. So what you find is a remarkably international mix of people who have chosen to stand alongside Ukraine. Naturally, I asked these men one simple question. Was the war anything like what you expected?
I didn't really know exactly what to expect when I came here to this war, but some things were exactly what I had imagined. It is extremely difficult. You constantly see videos and reports, and that's what you expect when you come here. A lot of what you see in those images is actually the reality of what happens on the battlefield. But the war here in Ukraine is different. It is much more technological. I had to adapt to the new systems of warfare that are being used here in Ukraine today. We always imagined the worst, but when we actually arrived on the battlefield, it was even worse. It was a very difficult and painful experience. But we learned to control our fears, and now we are here, some from Transkyr.
We prepared ourselves for the worst, but once we reached the front line, it turned out to be even worse. It was an incredibly tough experience, but we learned how to keep our fear under control. They expected the worst, and somehow the reality was even worse. And these are men with military experience. They've seen combat before. They know what it's like to see people killed or to be forced to kill themselves. And yet they all say that Ukraine is something completely different. I've heard the same thing from many of the other foreign fighters I've met here. I mentioned the former German soldier earlier. I've also spoken to an American mercenary. They all describe the same fundamental difference. And we've talked about it many times on this podcast before. We'll link a few of those episodes in the show notes as well. That difference is drones. Today, you're often spotted long before you even realize you've been seen. If you move, you could be dead just seconds later. Along the front line, there's now what's effectively a 40-kilometer deep kill zone, a strip of land where simply moving around is incredibly dangerous, often deadly. The battlefield has become a place where you're being watched before you even know you're in danger. It's no longer just about taking cover from artillery fire. You're hiding from eyes in the sky, from technology that can detect you, track you, and kill you. That's what makes this war so different from conventional wars. In the past, you mainly had to worry about artillery shells, mortars, and indirect fire. A shell would come in and land somewhere, and if you were unlucky, you'd be killed or wounded. A drone is different. It hunts you.
Before we came here, we already knew this war was different. It's a war where drones play a major role.
The men speak in a calm, matter-of-fact way. It's almost as if they've seen things that simply can't be put into words, so they've reduced their experiences to short, blunt sentences. Dominic doesn't even have to say much. You can see the consequences for yourself. He's standing on crutches. He told me that shrapnel from an explosion shattered his knee. And maybe that's why the conversation so quickly turns to winter, to the cold, to pain, to the physical toll of war. Because for these men, war isn't just about strategy or geopolitics. It's something that tears directly into the human body. Right now, it's fair to say this war is more deadlocked than it has been in a long time. The front has become a massive war of attrition, with very little movement. That was also true in the sector where these Colombian soldiers were deployed. We met in the southeast of the country, in the Dnipro region, but farther southeast of the regional capital itself. The actual front line was about 30 kilometers from where we were talking. At this point, Russian forces are barely making any meaningful advances. They're sacrificing huge numbers of troops and enormous amounts of equipment, yet they're gaining very little ground. Earlier this year, there were concerns that Russia might launch a major summer offensive. So far, that hasn't happened. Or rather, those offensive efforts have been contained. At the same time, Ukraine has become increasingly effective at disrupting Russian logistics with both long-range and short-range drones. They're also targeting Russia's oil and gas infrastructure, the financial lifeblood that keeps the Russian war machine running. A great deal is happening behind the front lines, deep inside Russian territory, and that could eventually change the course of this war. The Colombians are serving with Ukraine's 31st Mechanized Brigade. When I spoke with them, a Ukrainian officer was also there, the deputy battalion commander. Through an interpreter, he explained how the brigade views these foreign volunteers. That's important because it leads to another key question. Are the Colombians simply filling gaps in Ukraine's ranks, or have they become a genuine part of the unit?
When you ask about their motivation, they always say they came here to help the Ukrainian people, people they consider friends, to defend themselves against the Russian invasion. In terms of their military skills and abilities, you can see the difference. These men come here, many of them young. Some arrive with combat experience, others without it. But everyone receives training, and they have performed very well in their missions. As for the Colombians, I can say they are a truly valuable part of our forces.
As far as the brigade is concerned, the Colombians have long since become part of the unit. And that's interesting in itself. The language barrier, which at first seems enormous, I mean, as I mentioned, none of the four guys spoke Ukrainian, actually appears to be much less of an obstacle in everyday life than you might expect.
With translation apps, there are some Colombians who understand a little Russian or Ukrainian, and we communicate with them that way as well. Most of them are quick learners and gradually teach themselves Ukrainian. Those who have been here longer can already communicate quite well in Ukrainian. At the command post, the radio station from where combat operations are coordinated, there is also a foreign soldier, more specifically, a Colombian. He understands the orders and coordinates the missions of his fellow soldiers.
That, too, says a lot about the nature of this war. It's no longer just a war between the armies of two countries. It's also a war in which fighters from all over the world are being integrated into the same units, where languages mix, life stories intersect, and military necessity creates entirely new realities. The men themselves describe their relationship with the Ukrainians in a surprisingly matter-of-fact way. They're not overly enthusiastic, and they don't romanticize it. But they're clearly positive about it.
They don't mistreat us, and they don't treat us like children either. We are grown men, and we understand how military life works. They treat us very well. We have no complaints at all. They are very friendly and supportive toward us foreigners.
It's certainly not a warm or comforting tone, and that's exactly what makes it sound credible. The men don't claim that everything is easy or that everyone is friendly. They say military life is tough. There are orders to follow, and there's a harsh way of speaking to one another, but they don't feel abused, they don't feel humiliated, and they don't feel like second-class soldiers. That makes the picture much more complicated. Some of these men certainly came here for the money, but they don't see themselves as expendable. They see themselves as soldiers serving alongside other soldiers. Then there's another uncomfortable truth. Colombians aren't fighting only for Ukraine, Russia has also been recruiting men from Colombia. We've talked about that in one of our previous episodes as well. There are a great many foreign fighters serving in the Russian army, including many from Latin America. At a prisoner of war camp in western Ukraine, for example, I met men from Colombia, Venezuela, and Cuba. There were also large numbers of mercenaries from Africa, from Nigeria, Kenya, and several other countries, as well as men from India, Nepal, Sri Lanka, and Bangladesh. Which means that, in this war, one Colombian may end up shooting at another Colombian, perhaps without either of them ever knowing it. So I asked the men what that means to them.
On the battlefield, you don't look at whether someone has light skin or dark skin. On the battlefield, you don't know who is who. You don't know whether someone is Russian or Colombian. The moment he wears a Russian uniform, he becomes my enemy. Even if he is Colombian, he is still our enemy because he is defending the Russian side. That makes him a military target.
Those are the kind of sentences that stay with you, because they show how war changes the meaning of categories. Background, language, nationality, all of that loses importance on the battlefield when someone is standing on the other side. For the men I met, the logic is brutally simple. If someone is wearing a Russian uniform, they are the enemy, even if they come from the same country, even if they speak the same language, even if they may carry a very similar personal history. And the Ukrainian officer I spoke with sees it in much the same clear-eyed way.
They all see this as their job, and they see the enemy as the enemy. There is an enemy. There is an order to eliminate that enemy. And they carry out that order.
The enemy is the enemy. That sentence sounds like a military statement when Ukrainians say it. But when the Colombians say it, it sounds existential. When I drove away after that meeting, I didn't have a simple answer. Of course, you ask yourself, why would people from a relatively safe country put their lives at risk like this? Yes, Colombia still struggles with serious crime and violence, but compared to Ukraine, it is, of course, a relatively peaceful country. So what makes people go to a place like Ukraine and risk their lives for a cause that, in reality, is not their own? And with questions like this, I always find myself somewhat torn. On one hand, I can understand that the money is obviously a powerful incentive. Serving in the Ukrainian armed forces can mean earning 10 times what the average person in Colombia makes. And I can also understand someone saying, I want to stand up against injustice. But as I said, it is always complicated when you talk to people in situations like this. I mentioned my encounter with Mika earlier. He was the German fighter I met years ago who had joined the war in Ukraine. At first, he also came across as an idealist. He said he was fighting against evil, against the Russian aggressor who had simply invaded Ukraine. But later, Mika put a hand grenade to his face and detonated it because he was deeply traumatized and could no longer cope with what he had experienced. And that is also something that stays in the back of your mind when you talk to these men. When I met them, they seemed incredibly relaxed. At first glance, you couldn't see the hell they had lived through, the horrors they had experienced, or what they had survived. The question is, of course, what will these men take home with them if they do make it home after surviving this war? And what happens when they are suddenly thrown back into civilian life? These are questions you inevitably ask yourself when you meet people like this. And they are questions that will probably only be answered months or even years from now. What all of these men have in common is that they experienced a war that was far worse than anything they had imagined. Maybe that's why one sentence stands out above all the others. Not the one about weapons, not the one about politics, the one about winter.
I like winter, but as a tourist, not as a soldier. Winter looks beautiful on television, but staying here? No. I like winter when I'm on vacation, when I can play with my children. But being at the front line in winter is complicated. Winter on the battlefield is extremely harsh. It's freezing cold. You feel like your fingers are going to break off.
These men traveled almost 10,000 kilometers. Today, the war in Ukraine is their everyday reality. They talk about pay, about justice, about brotherhood. But above all, they talk about a war that turned out to be far worse than anything they had ever imagined. Maybe that is what explains their story better than any political debate ever could. That was this episode of In Crisis Mode. It was produced by Alexander Baumeister. He is also a journalist and works for a radio station within the Funke Media Group. If you enjoy the podcast, follow us, leave us a rating, and feel free to share your thoughts about the people whose voices you have just heard. You can write to us at chrisandmodus@funkemedian.de. That's all for today. Take care of yourselves. See you soon. Bye.
In Crisis Mode, the podcast from Conflict Zones with Jan Jessen.
Podcast von Funke.